This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ryan Wheeler, the Executive Director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk about growth and development issues here in Central Virginia. They're online at cvilletomorrow.org. Brian, how are you?
Very well, Coy. Thanks.
It's always just chilling stuff. When I came in here this afternoon and passed the newsroom and heard about this, I just got this chill in my up my spine that, oh my God, there's a, you know,
especially
it's just so scary.
Yeah, especially.
Because you can really relate to the terror that this family must be going through.
That's right. And I was telling you before during the break that in college at UVA, I used to be part of a Blue Ridge Mountain Rescue Group. And we would go all over the state, nearby states, doing search and rescue. Now, in Virginia, it's hard to get lost. So typically, we were looking for not the lost hiker because they found their way out. We were looking for children. We were looking for elderly patients with Alzheimer's. We were looking for downed aircraft. But I've been on those searches and have, you know, carried small children out of the woods and helped
find
them.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's, you know, it's amazing sometimes how close to home they can be. We had a certain radius within the point last seen where we would focus the initial effort of the search.
Yeah.
Because
that's most likely where they are.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I remember, we didn't have a lot of technology then. We were coloring maps. You know, we didn't have GPS or anything. We had to use compasses and old-fashioned walkie-talkies. But I remember, you know, on one search in particular, we'd colored the maps as to where all the teams had been on the previous day. And I noticed one part had not been looked at during the day. It had only been searched at night. And so we dispatched a team out during the day to go back to that spot, even though we'd already been there several times. And sure enough, that's where that child ended up being found.
Did you, and the ones that you found, what were they doing? Just sitting there like...
Well, it depends on the situation. And certainly the weather is a big concern, and hypothermia. And as you know, patients get hypothermic, they start doing things they don't realize they're doing and taking clothes off and doing things that end up hurting them more. So time is very important in these situations. And I'm sure folks out there are worried and also working very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a reminder, folks, you can see this little girl's picture. Her name is Olivia. She's been missing since about 2:30 this afternoon in the Pine Forest subdivision area of Fluvanna County. You can see her picture on the WINA.com website. Just click on the news page. And again, the number for the Fluvanna Sheriff's Office is 589-8211. Brian, before we get to the pies, let's go real quick to the phones. Betty's on line one. Betty, thanks for the call. You're on with Brian Wheeler. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I wondered if Brian was listening to the discussion with Tom Frederick, the previous hour that you had, but something that came up right at the end is very upsetting to me, and I wondered if Brian would comment on it. What I understood Mr. Frederick to say to Hawes Spencer's question is that there would have been enough water to meet the 50-year target goal just by dredging the South Fork Ravanna Reservoir if we had not applied for the permit. And I know this is very complicated. There are these things called stream, in-stream flow requirements. But what I heard Mr. Frederick say was those requirements right now are voluntary in our community. And so we could have just dredged the South Fork Ravanna and had all the water we needed for 50 years. And I've read the Gannett Fleming studies, reports, documents from beginning to end. And what they say is that that would have been the least environmentally damaging thing for our community to do, obviously, because building a huge dam and a huge brand new pipeline is going to tear up lots of landscape. And this would have been a relatively simple procedure, as has been outlined by the Hook, and much less costly, we now have reason to believe. And I'm just kind of in shock, and I wondered if Brian Wheeler would comment on this.
Betty, thank you so much for the call. And as a matter of fact, Brian Wheeler has it on his our little agenda here right towards the top that you did want to respond to some of the matters that were discussed by Tom Frederick, and you were listening, of course.
I was listening, Betty, and I didn't have the same takeaway that you did on that statement. I guess I'll have to go back and listen to it again. Fortunately, we'll have the podcast available to do that.
We record it all.
But a couple of the takeaways that I did hear that I think are important, And not to get into all the details of the permits, but clearly some of them are important. I thought Hawes Spencer made a good point, the editor of The Hook made a good point that there are some issues in this permit that RWSA did file on behalf of the community to improve stream flows of the Mormons River. And clearly that was one of the community's goals, represented primarily by Friends of the Mormons River and the Nature Conservancy, who worked together to give the RWSA some research on which to base those decisions about what is the appropriate stream flow, how can that stream be restored to better health. So,
and for folks who don't know, that's the river that comes out of Sugar Hollow, and folks want to see that full of water again.
That's right, and that feeds into the South Fork Ravana Reservoir. So I thought Hawes Spencer was correct to point out the connection there. But I also heard Mr. Frederick say very clearly, and I think what I took away was no matter what happens with stream flows coming out of the Mormons, that Mr. Frederick said dredging alone was not going to get the regulators' approval as a 50-year plan, that something else had to be done in addition to dredging. If you did dredging, that'll get you some capacity. It'll get you some a certain number of million gallons per day back into the system that you would recover. But it alone would not be enough to satisfy a 50-year plan. Now, what I've heard folks like Kevin Lynch, former city councilor, say is that's why we should do phasing, that you should not, that you could put on paper a 50-year plan, but maybe you take certain steps along the way. And dredging could certainly be one of those steps. It was ruled out by the RWSA, partially because of the cost estimate they had from their consultant, Gannett Fleming, and also in part because it wasn't alone going to deliver enough water supply. So, Betty, I don't think you're on the line anymore, but I would just say I'm going to need to go back and listen to that because I didn't quite hear it the way you did.
Yeah, and I think he said that dredging the Ravana, the South Fork of the Ravana, would give you like 14-something, but we still are missing, or 16, but we're still missing like roughly four miles per gallon, 4 million gallons per day. Can't you just then fix the Ragged Mountain? Because I think the estimate on just bringing that up to modern standards is under 4 million. And wouldn't that give you some extra capacity?
That's just to repair the existing dam. That doesn't give you any additional capacity.
It doesn't, okay.
That's just to fix the dam. And, you know, there are a lot of moving parts here. And I thought Tom...
There are, and it's confusing.
You know, there's another pipeline we've talked about a lot from Sugar Hollow to Ragged Mountain.
Right, right, the big one.
This plan intends to eliminate because it needs to be replaced. And so the cost of replacing that, if you go to the dredging option and you're still relying on Ragged Mountain to be filled via Sugar Hollow, then there's a cost for that pipeline.
Yeah.
And that needs to be factored in if you go that route. And I thought Tom Frederick, you know, at the very end there made a good point, which was these things are very complicated. It's easy to say, to want to look at a number that's much less and say, oh, that, you know, you got a bad quote and where somebody had a hidden agenda. And so there is a much cheaper way to do this. Let's explore that. And I think making sure all the options are on the table and exploring them is absolutely what we should be doing as a community. But having been involved in the school division and some complex issues, whether it's redistricting or the budget or athletics, people often come to you and say, hey, why don't you just move 100 students to another school and then, you know, this school will be able to do this. And it's not always as simple as it sometimes appears when you just take a cursory look at some things.
Brian, one of the things we didn't get to with Tom Frederick that I had meant to ask him about was in this 50-year plan, the Mormons River will have a little bit more water flow in it, and the environmentalists will be happy. But what about the Ravana River? It'll change the flow on the Ravana River, too. And that nobody's really talking about that. The downflow on the Ravana will be changed, won't it?
Well, not really, because the water that gets diverted to Ragged Mountain gets into Morris Creek, which eventually gets to the Ravana River. So a certain stretch of the Ravana, depending on where you direct this water,
will be sort of dry.
It all feeds into the Ravana, so no substantial impact there.
Want to thank again Tom Frederick for joining us in the last hour, and we will, of course, investigate the possibility of having a town hall forum to continue this discussion, which I believe is, with Brian here, and I know I've spoken with Hawes about this, Hawes Spencer at The Hook, that truly is what this community needs more of, obviously, because there's just so many questions, and You know, we had a caller, Don, called and said, hey, Tom Frederick is your guy. He's the one guy talking that can answer these questions. And so we just need to hear more of him.
And you mentioned Don Wagner, and he's, of course, on the Albemarle County Service Authority Board. And there are other people. We were talking before the break about who is on Tom's board. Who does Tom Frederick report to?
Yeah, who is that board? Who is Tom's boss? Because that's fascinating to me. Who is this board? Because, you know, I think Rich Collins had a great point in the clip we played from Rich Collins. Tom Frederick is not a politician. Tom Frederick doesn't set policy. Tom Frederick is told by his board, we want you to do this. So he tries to figure out a way to do it and make sure all the planes land in the right order and cross all the T's and dot all the I's. That's his job. His job is not the policy end. This board that decides the policy, who are they?
Well, three of them are directly accountable to elected officials and the city manager. So it's let me just run through the list. Gary O'Connell, who's the city manager, Judith Mueller, who runs the public works in the city, Gary Fern, who runs the Albemarle County Service Authority, Mike Gaffney, who's a local builder, and then Bob Tucker, who's the county executive. So there are not any...
So a bunch of bureaucrats and a builder are deciding our water policy.
Well,
there you go.
Certainly people heavily involved in the community. But one of the critiques, as this whole water supply discussion that's happened since 2004 and 2005, has been, do we have the right people on that board? Should we have an elected official there? And certainly in Albemarle County, at least, supervisors are starting to raise this and ask that question. And Ken Boyd in particular, and I believe Sally Thomas, have both said they would like to see elected officials in a place on that board instead of their staff member, Bob Tucker.
Right, right.
You're listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, thanks to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you want to get involved with the show, feel free to comment on our blog at sevillepodcast.com.
Gracious. Let's rejoin the conversation with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can learn more online at sevilletomorrow.org. Before we go any further, let's talk about pie.
A friend of mine, Cole, said, Brian, I love your show with Coy, but you just don't talk about pie enough.
Because we did talk about pie.
Because about pie, and he just thought that was the greatest show. That was the number one show I've ever done with you.
Well, pie rocks. I love pie.
There is something about pie. You know, the Twin Peaks show and Agent Cooper.
Yeah, cup of coffee and a
probably
slice
like
of pie.
Five people listening and know what I'm talking about. So I won't spend any time on it.
I'm with you.
But I sort of obsess about pies. And we used to live at Blandemar Farm, south of town. This was before it was developed. And there were cherry trees on the property. And once we cleaned the cherry trees, and we had the permission of the property owner, but my wife made cherry pies, and there's never been another cherry pie like that one.
Which is your favorite? Like, if you have any pie tonight when you get home, Brian, I got pie in the kitchen. What would it be? Any pie you want?
Probably apple pie.
Apple? Oh, apple?
Yeah. I mean, I like them all.
Yeah.
So,
sweet potato.
But if I had to pick one.
I'm a sweet potato man. Yeah. Sweet potato pie.
So, you know, the funny thing about the reason we talked about it a couple of years ago was there was a Washington Post article about this country store in Loudoun County. And the story was that's where everybody went since, you know, the 1940s to get their pies for Thanksgiving. So much so that all the embassies in Washington would dispatch somebody, you know, in a diplomatic vehicle out to Loudoun County.
Drive out to the country and get a pie.
To the Hill High Country Store to pick up their pie. And the Washington Post article was entitled, A Closely Held Recipe for Success. And what was closely held about it was the line of trucks bringing the frozen pies. Now, they did cook them. They did heat them there.
Yeah.
So you got the smell of the freshly cooked pie. But, you know, it got me thinking. And then this past weekend, my family and I were up, in Stanton, and we stopped at that first exit, if you're heading north on I-81.
After the 250.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's 250, but whatever that first exit is. And there's
The first Stanton exit.
Yeah.
When you go from 64 to 81 north?
Is that?
That's 250.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a place there called Mrs. Rose Restaurant and Bakery. I highly recommend it. So they have pies, and I think they make them because it says they have some frozen ones that you can buy, but it says Virginia's Finest, and it looks like they've packaged it themselves.
They're not just heating it up.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah.
What,
they're not
what did
trucking
you get?
It in.
What did you get?
Oh, we brought home, I think, a blackberry pie. It's still in our freezer. But when I was there, I had the gingerbread with lemon sauce.
Oh, man.
This was some good eating.
I'm going there.
So it got me thinking.
I love Stanton.
It got me thinking about the pies up in Loudoun County, which, you know, were trucked in. But these were seemed to be homemade.
The real thing in Stanton, Virginia. There
and
you
there's
go.
There's a pie place in Lynchburg I just love called Montana Plains Bakery.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. But I started thinking, where in Albemarle County... Now, I go to Chandler's Bakery a lot.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, we got some good local bakeries in town.
But if I was out driving in the country and I came across a country store, which one would have the best pie?
That is the question.
That's my question.
And we don't have the answer, Brian.
And Sean Tubbs, my colleague at work at Charlottesville Tomorrow, Sean and I, when the leaves turn green, when the leaves come out, hopefully they'll be green, and we're going to drive all around the county. We're going to circumnavigate the county. I think it's going to take about 7 hours just for driving.
Yeah. It's a big county.
We're going to go to places like Batesville, Boonesville, Howardsville, Scottsville, yeah. You name it.
All the little villes.
Out in the, all the crossroads places we're going.
Yeah.
But I need help finding pie.
So you're going to go drive around and give a little tour of the county in search of pie.
Right.
It's a quest, Brian. It's a quest for pie.
And we're going to blog as we go and take pictures as we go. And we're going to put the whole story up on the blog. At Charlottesville Tomorrow. And the reason we're doing this is, in part, Sean needs to get out of the city and see what real Albemarle County looks like. So I'm going to give him the tour and make him see it firsthand. But also, I think we have a lot of great country stores.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ideas that Albemarle County has as far as protecting its rural countryside is to protect those stores, and especially when they're historic. And
absolutely. And especially if they make good pie.
And if they make good pies and I can eat some and draw some attention to that, I'm happy to do it.
So we need to know where you should go on your quest for pie out in the hinterlands of the county. Diantha's on line one. Diantha, welcome to the program. You're on with Brian Wheeler. Go right ahead.
I just had to call and correct Brian. I grew up in Stanton, and it is Mrs. Rouse.
Rouse.
Oh. What did I say? I think I said Rose.
You said Rose.
Yes.
Rouse.
That's like saying Rio here in Charlotte.
Well, thank goodness, Diantha, they can't hear me over there.
But they do have the best pies.
Well,
Mrs. Rouse. Now, in Stanton, Virginia.
Right.
Mrs. Rouse.
Mrs. Rouse.
Now, Diantha, where would you go?
Queen of the pie.
In Albemarle County or Charlottesville to find a similar pie?
Nowhere. We drive over there and buy her desserts, and I'll tell you, they make a sugar-free apple.
Ooh.
That, when you can get it, is absolutely wonderful.
That must be a special one, because I'm looking at the menu, and I don't even see that one on here.
Yeah,
that's for the natives.
You have to ask for it. There's a particular apple, and I can't remember what they told me it was, but there's an apple that they can use for the sugar-free apple pie, and when it's in season, they make the sugar-free one.
She's got a back room for the natives who know the good pies.
I remember being at Mrs. Rouse when I was just teeny tiny, and so I just had to call and correct.
Well, I'm so glad you did. Hey, Diantha, I was over in Stanton the other day, and I picked up a crystal clear signal of WINA in downtown Stanton.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it was terrific.
It must have been the weather.
Yeah, it was stormy.
So now I'm going to get a lot of comments about this. Thank you, Diantha.
Diantha, thank
Brian,
you.
If you need one, I have one of her cookbooks. I'll let you borrow it.
Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, Diantha from Stanton, Stanton native. So Mrs. Rouse in Stanton. And what you need to know is, where should you go here in Albemarle County to find the best pie?
That's
so
right.
How can folks get in touch with you?
They can call me at 295-4955 and just leave a message. You don't even need to tell me who you are. Just say, I've got the best pie. Here's where you go.
Yeah.
That's all I need
to know.
And
ideally, you're going out of town. I mean, you don't want something downtown. You're going out in the countryside.
We're going out in the countryside. But, you know, I'll try pie wherever it is, Coy.
So it could be at somebody's house, and they say, Brian, look, I don't have a country store, but I make a mean, mean cherry pie.
Well, now that would be special. But, no, I was looking for commercially available
pies. Okay. All right.
So that we can tell people about them.
Yeah. And you can promote them.
Yeah.
And then you bring in some samples one afternoon.
Exactly. And my favorite radio commentators.
Absolutely. And we'll sample some of the pies and we'll promote the heck out of them.
And they can also email me at bwheeler@seavilletomorrow.org. And if you just Google Brian and pies, no, I mean Brian and Charlottesville Tomorrow, you'll find me.
Brian's Quest for Pie, Chapter 1. We'll continue that. We'll continue this saga on another program, unless you have a pie person there. No. Oh, look at that. The guys outside tell us, this coming Friday is Pie Day because it's March 14th. It's 3 1-4. It's 3-14 this coming Friday.
You know what that means. We're going to have to hit the road sooner than I thought.
It's Pi Day. Get it? Pi 3.14. March 14th, Friday.
So get those tips in quick.
They're too smart, those university students. How about that?
You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. After the break, Brian brought up the 5th and Avon development that's up before the Board of Supervisors on March 12th.
And I just want to bring that to the public's attention. It'll be on their agenda in the evening meeting.
The 5th Street and Avon Center shopping center back there on 5th Street extended right along the highway, right?
Right.
You'll be able to see it from 64.
Hopefully not much of it. There's a pretty substantial hill along I-64 there, and the developer is really trying to shield as much of that as possible.
Isn't there a creek back there? Isn't that Moore's Creek back there?
Yeah, and guess where that comes from? Ragged Mountain Reservoir.
There you go. Are they going to be building? They're going to be building right up against Moore's Creek?
They will. That's one of the challenges on this site.
Yeah.
But there's already a road right up against it.
Are they going to have one of those retention ponds, you know, that they build, you know, where all the water runs off of the parking lot into this little pond?
I don't remember looking at the stormwater plan, but yeah, typically when you add a lot of asphalt, you need to have a place where you collect and slow that water down before it gets into the creek.
Yeah. What's the latest with the medical center? Because they made some announcements. The University of Virginia Medical Center made some announcements about some new buildings. Of course, we've talked to Josh Scott before about the plans for the new cancer center.
Yeah, we gave this some coverage last week and would certainly encourage people to go to seavilletomorrow.org, click on the weblog, and you can find a story about the changing face of the UVA Medical Center. Last week, they had a public meeting with the community. We covered that. You can listen to the audio. You can look at the pictures. And there are four major medical facilities being proposed, some of them right around the hospital, and another one out at Northridge. Northridge out 250 West, so past Boar's Head, past Farmington, and then there's that Northridge facility right now,
yeah.
The glass building that you see. It's got the colored umbrellas down in the patio.
Near the car dealership. What's that kind of car?
Right before the Volvo dealership.
Volvo, yeah. Right before you get to the Volvo dealership, 250 West. They're going to build another big building out there?
They're going to build another big building out there called the Long-Term Acute Care Hospital, and they're going to start on that this summer.
Wow.
So that's imminent. That, they predict, will bring another 200 employees, new employees, to the medical center. And that's one of them. The other three, one of them is the Emily Kirk Clinical Cancer Center.
Yep.
That's going to replace the west parking garage across from the main hospital.
Right across from the hospital where we all park now.
That's right. The one closest to the old hospital.
They're going to tear that down.
Tear that down. They're closing it April 1st. They'll start demolishing it to make room for the groundbreaking in April of the Kirk Clinical Cancer Center.
And what's this about a new glass tower or something that they're going to build on the existing hospital?
Well, the head of the medical center sort of took the audience in a flyby simulation. And the most dramatic picture I saw was this big glass appendage being placed on the main hospital. So you got the big white main hospital, three towers.
1985-ish, yeah.
Imagine a six-story glass facade covering up a third of that.
Why?
Well, more.
What's it going to do?
Well, you know, my personal opinion, and only my personal opinion.
Is it like a plant nursery?
There's not much you can do to hurt that building as far as the way it looks. So, it makes it look more interesting. But it's a 72-bed, six-story tower to be added to the face of the hospital.
Oh, okay. And it's just a different design that's going to be stuck onto the side
right.
of it.
And the architect, one of the architects, talked about how adding a lot of glass in all these facilities is intended to make these better patient spaces. The other place, the fourth one, is the Barry and Bill Battle Children's Hospital. That's going to go at the intersection of JPA and West Main, currently where the towers facility is.
They're going to tear the towers down and build a children's hospital.
They wouldn't commit to that. I asked them point blank, are you tearing down the towers? They said, we haven't decided yet. But it's hard for me to imagine two buildings on the same spot. So
uh-huh.
I'd say it's days or numbers.
So that's where the children's hospital will go. At JPA and West Main.
That's right.
Right near the corner.
So a whole lot of shaking going on. Three of those will all be built in the next 3.5 years.
Wow. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He is a man in search of pie. A good man, an honorable man on a quest for pie. Brian, take care. Thanks.
Thanks, Corey.
Y'all have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.